Good morning, I'm Donna Quinn, and for the next half hour, you'll be listening to Talk of Our Towns. Today, we'll be learning about a wonderful project, the Confluence Project. What is it? How can you be involved? Well, there is an event, the Confluence Story Gatherings, happening on February 18th. That's a Saturday, from 2 to 4 at the Liberty Theater. To find out more about what the Confluence Project is and this amazing gathering that's going to be happening on Saturday, February 18th, I have in the studio Colin Fogarty. Colin is the director of the Confluence Project. Hi, Colin.
Hello.
So happy you're here today.
I'm happy to be here.
Yes. I know you don't live in Astoria. You are from the Northwest, though, and you have been, gosh, an OPB reporter. You've done things for NPR. In fact, please tell the listening audience a bit about yourself.
So I actually grew up in Ohio, and I moved out to Oregon in 1994 because I was in love with my now wife, and in love with Oregon and the Northwest, and became an OPB reporter and thought it was the best job in the world. And I did that for 13 years, and then eventually I became a regional editor of the Northwest News Network and KMUN and Coast Community Radio as a proud member of the Northwest News Network. So I've filed stories from here. I've always loved coming to the station here, and I loved working with people from Coast Community Radio through the Northwest News Network. But about 3 years ago, this opportunity came up to be executive director of Confluence, and in my mind, it was trading one form of storytelling for another. And I really did a lot of examination about what are the stories that I was most interested in? What are the stories that really stuck with me? Because there were plenty of political stories that I did from the State House in Salem, where I'd come home and my wife would say, what story did you do today? And I'd be like, I don't remember. But the stories that always stuck with me and that I loved were about the history of the Columbia River and the history of the cultures of the Columbia River. And what really drew me in were the invisible stories. The stories about the history of this place that connect us to this place, but we don't see and we're not reminded of on a regular basis. And so Confluence, in my mind, is about that, about reminding people what's missing, what has been here before, and the fact that the story of our region is fundamentally not Lewis and Clark discovered this place. The story is Lewis and Clark came here, took excellent notes, and met people. And not only that, the descendants of those people are still here, and they have a thing or two to tell us and teach us about caring for this environment, about connecting to place. And ultimately, Confluence is about connecting people to place through art and education.
Confluence, the word itself, I think most people would just say, well, that means a coming together, correct?
Exactly.
Right. Yeah. So it's a coming together. So Confluence is a community-supported nonprofit. So you are probably funded by grants and by donations.
That's exactly right.
Okay. And you work in collaboration just in the Northwest communities and with tribes and artists here in the Northwest.
That's exactly right.
And you are based in Vancouver, Washington.
Yeah, so Confluence is, most people know us through our art landscape installations by the celebrated artist Maya Lin. You know, she's the artist that did the Vietnam Veterans Memorial. So if you've ever been to The Wall in Washington, D.C., you know the power of her approach to art, which is technically called minimalist, but I like to think of it as quiet art. It's art that brings you in, that draws you in, and doesn't hammer you over the head of here's what you should think and here's how you should interpret this, but allows you or invites you to bring your own story to that place, to that story. Maya Lin transformed how we look at memorials. Maya Lin transformed the role of art in public space. And if you've been to the 9/11 memorial, she didn't design that. But as soon as I saw it, I was like, this would not be the way it is were it not for Maya Lin. And so in around 2000, 2001, a delegation of tribal elders from the Umatilla Reservation, from Warm Springs, from Chinook, Chief Cliff Snyder of the Chinook Nation, traveled to New York City to meet with Maya Lin and ask her to do something along the Columbia River that connects people to the Lewis and Clark expedition. And this was right before the bicentennial. And she was not really interested in the whole Lewis and Clark story, necessarily. Like, that was not her thing. But their point was Lewis and Clark met people. They met cultures along the Columbia River, and we're still here. We didn't go anywhere, and they didn't discover us. We just saw them traveling through our area. And what she was most interested in is telling an ecological story, telling a story about the transformation of the environment over the last 200 years. So to make a long story short, Confluence is six sites along the Columbia River. It's 438 miles, and it begins at Cape Disappointment at the mouth of the Columbia River.
That's the very first site.
Exactly.
And when was Confluence founded?
So from a legal perspective, it really goes back to the late 1990s as a sort of a movement, but it became a 501c3 in 2002, and the first site was dedicated in 2006 at Cape Disappointment.
Okay, so you have six installations, art installations along the Columbia River, and the first one is at Cape Disappointment.
That's right.
The one that Maya Lin did, and that opened to the public in?
In 2006. And so if you've been to Cape Disappointment, you know there's a fish cleaning table there. And there are other features, but I like to talk just about that because it's on Baker Bay. And there had been a rusty old fish cleaning table there. But what Maya Lin did is create a fish cleaning table that was a working table. You could clean your fish on it, made of solid basalt. And etched into the basalt is the Chinook creation story that explains the proper way to fillet a salmon. And so the idea, and we talk about connecting people to place, is you catch a salmon, you come off the bay, you're processing your fish, and you're reminded that people have been doing exactly that for 10,000 years right there. And it's a powerful moment of connection.
It's an amazing piece. I have seen it. How is it doing with the weather?
So that's a really good question because, when they say, well, it's set in stone or it's written in stone, it means something, right? So, but not on the coast, because after 10 years, the basalt had eroded so much with the salty air, with the seagulls, with the use, with the knives on the table that you couldn't read it. So last year, we had it polished and re-etched with this master stonemason, Pete Andrusko, and it has looked beautiful ever since. And part of our purpose as an organization is to maintain this art and keep tabs on it and make sure that it is presentable at all times.
Oh, good. All right. So you started with the first installation in 2006, which opened to the public. And then where did you move from Cape Disappointment?
So the next two sites opened on the same day in 2008. And one was the Confluence Land Bridge at Fort Vancouver. And the other was the Confluence Bird Blind at the Sandy River Delta, which is in Troutdale, Oregon, just east of Portland. The land bridge is an effort to, Vancouver is a river town, just like Astoria. But there's a freeway, there's a railroad track, and the whole town and the whole community is really cut off from the riverfront. The land bridge is a way to reconnect people with the river, but also reconnect people with the native history of that place. Yes, we know about the Hudson's Bay Company. Yes, we know about Fort Vancouver, the military installation. But what about the native area? What about the fact that those have been plains where native people have farmed camas and wapato and have traded and lived for thousands of years? So that's what that piece is about. And it's literally a bridge that goes over the freeway that you can walk over to get to the riverfront.
And then you have three more.
So, and the bird blind at the Sandy River Delta is at the end of a 1.2-mile hike. And it is literally a bird blind in the middle of the woods. And inside is a list. Maya Lin likes lists. It's part of her work. And this is a list of all of the species that Lewis and Clark documented on their westward journey and their environmental status today, endangered, threatened. So it's a reminder of the lushness that Lewis and Clark encountered at the Delta and along the Columbia River, that there were so many salmon you could walk across the river. It's not that way anymore. So it's a reminder of that. So the next piece happened at, it was in 2010, and it was in Tri-Cities in Pasco, Washington, at the confluence. A lot of these are at confluences, right? So Cape Disappointment is the confluence of the Columbia River and the ocean. And so the confluence of the Snake River and the Columbia River at Pasco has been a trading area for a long time. And so what Maya Lin designed there was a series of story circles, again, made of basalt. And some of them are are elliptical, some of them are round, but they're stories that connect you with the flora and the fauna and the cultures of that place going back 10,000 years. So the fifth site was completed in 2015 is at near the confluence of the Snake River and the Clearwater River, and it's in Nez Perce homelands, and it is a listening circle, and it's literally an amphitheater on a hillside. Where of all the confluence sites, it looks the most like what Lewis and Clark encountered 200 years ago. And it's a beautiful place at a place called Chief Timothy Park along the Snake River. And it's a place to listen to stories, for events. One of the things we want to do as an organization is really organize events there. So we're going to have one of these story gatherings at Chief Timothy Park, so that you can use this space as a place to connect to the history of the Columbia River system and the cultures. So that's five, and five of them are complete. The sixth site is not complete yet, and we hope to finish that in 2018, and it's at Celilo Park.
Oh, yes, so needed there. So not only does the Confluence Project have these public art installations, you also have educational programs, and you have now created these Confluence Story Gatherings, which is what is going to be happening at the Liberty Theater on Saturday, February 18th. What is a Confluence Story Gathering?
Yeah, so what I love about that name is that it's a double entendre, or it's a double meaning, that we've been gathering stories from Native elders and leaders through interviews. We've been sitting down and interviewing them with our partners from Northwest Documentary, which is a film school. And so we sit down and we videotape them for 2-3 hours at a time, just hearing their stories, asking questions and listening to them. What do they know about their ancestors along the Columbia River, about their personal experience along the Columbia River system? And so the story gatherings themselves, again, we've gathered the stories, but we're all gathering together to hear them, are discussions meant to elevate indigenous voices in our understanding of the Columbia River system. We know about science. We know about the hydro system. We know about the environment, right? But what we wanted to do is really bring indigenous voices to elevate them in the public discussion about how we understand the Columbia River, because we believe that that matters. And it's not our story to tell. Right? So Confluence is not a tribal organization. We work with tribes. Our role is to be a venue, a confluence to bring people together. And so what we will do is literally play, you know, the program will be divided into three parts, and each part will include excerpts from these interviews, and I'll describe them. I'm just going to use my radio skills and just kind of describe, like set each excerpt up, and then we hear those voices themselves. And then that frames the discussion with a panel of experts. And in a story on February 18th at the Liberty Theater, we're going to have Oregon's poet laureate Elizabeth Woody, who is Warm Springs and who works with us on the Celilo Park Project, and also Tony Johnson, who's the chairman of the Chinook Nation. And they'll respond to the voices of the elders, right? We have to hear from the elders first. And that frames the discussion, and all with the point of elevating indigenous voices in our understanding.
I love the idea that it happens right there, that it's happening in live, in real time.
Right.
It's not, yeah. Although there will also be videos, it sounds like.
Yeah, so we'll have videos of these interviews, right? So you'll on the big screen, you'll be able to see people talking about these. And, you know, we're going to record them, too, and turn them into podcasts afterwards.
Oh, yes. So did you already do one and at Temascalis, at the Temascalis Cultural Institute in Pendleton? And the only way I know how to say that is because I visited the museum, the Cultural Institute in Pendleton, and there was a wonderful older man sitting at the front desk as I came in, and I said, I'm not sure how to say this word. He said, oh, I'm going to tell you. He said, this is the way to remember it. Just think that someone has given you a huge sucker, and it is too much to lick. It's too much to lick. So it's Temascalisk. So Temascalisk Cultural Institute in Pendleton. I love that story. Anyway, so what happened there?
Yeah, it was really a special event. And what's funny is that It went 2 hours and I got really conscious, like, oh, we're taking up too much time. We got to really bring this down. And in the feedback cards, there were two people who said, I wish it would have gone 3 hours.
Huh.
Because what happened was Bobby Connor, who's the head of Temastelict, and Elizabeth Woody was there. And then one of our board members, Patsy Whitefoot, who's from the Yakima Nation. She's an educator there. They just really had an incredible discussion. And so they would listen to these excerpts from Wilbur Slotkish, who's a river chief along the Columbia River, and Johnny Jackson, who's also a river chief along the Columbia River, and two Nez Perce elders, Wilfred and Bessie Scott, and then Bobby Connor's mother, Leah Connor. And so Leah talked about growing up along the Columbia River. She talked about her grandmother and how her grandmother was chased off an island in the Columbia River in the 1870s by a militia and ended up at the Umatilla Reservation, a harrowing story. But then also talked about how they kept their cultures alive for decades through traveling throughout eastern Oregon and trading and fishing and living a lifestyle that was connected to the earth. And she told this very funny story about how her family used to ride on horses, and they would miles and miles and miles. And so they had little moccasins for the dogs, and the cat would ride on the saddle, living this life. And so those are stories you don't see very often. Those are stories you really don't hear. And that's the story of this place. That's the story of the Northwest. We all have a connection to the Northwest. But what about those other voices that we're not hearing?
We need to know where we are and why are we here? What made this happen? You know, I agree. Sense of place, so important. If you've just tuned in, you're listening to Talk of Our Towns. I'm your host, Donna Quinn. Today, I'm speaking with Colin Fogarty. Colin is the executive director of the Confluence Project. The Confluence Project is a community-supported nonprofit that connects people to place through arts and education. And they have six art installations, five, and a sixth one to come soon along the Columbia River. That whole ecosystem is where you are. And they have education programs, which we'll touch on in this last half of the program. And what's really exciting is that they have a Confluence story gathering, the voices of Indigenous peoples, on Saturday, February 18th, from 2 to 4 p.m. at the Liberty Theater here in Astoria, Oregon. It's something you don't want to miss, and it is free and open to the public. No tickets for that.
No, and you know, we should really thank the Oregon Community Foundation, because these events are funded through them, and that's part of the deal. Like, they're going to fund something, and this is a public event, and we want people to it to be as accessible as possible.
When you talk about stories, and I know that I have heard it said that, you know, stories make up the world.
Mm-hmm.
And stories teach us, they heal us, they unite us. There was a wonderful book I read many, many years ago called In the Absence of the Sacred. And Jerry Mander actually wrote that book. He also wrote something about get rid of your television, which I also probably agree with. Anyway, In the Absence of the Sacred, and he argued, and this book is at least 20 or 30 years old, and he said, it is not technology that is going to save us. It is the wisdom of the Indigenous peoples.
Mm-hmm.
And it's an amazing book. But you know that. You hear these stories, and we learn from these stories. Not only are they entertaining,
mm-hmm.
and they enrich us in our spirits, but we also learn.
Mm-hmm. We learn to become better stewards of this place, right? You know, to understand the history of it, and to understand the cultures who have lived here before, and just the notion of orienting yourself from the river, that the first foods are water and salmon and so on, working your way up the landscape. It changes your perspective. And fundamentally, one of the things about the Columbia River is it's managed, right? And fundamentally, the Western perspective of how to manage the Columbia River is to see it as an industrial thing to harness. That's what the hydroelectric system is about. And we are all beneficiaries of this. Some of the electricity in this room and some of the electricity that is sending these radio waves to where you're listening comes from the Dalles Dam and comes from the John Day Dam and all of these dams. So it is a thing we have harnessed. And the native perspective is exactly the opposite, which is it is a resource. It's a life resource. And that fundamental understanding leads more toward better stewardship, And better care for the environment. One of the things that Bobby Connor, the head of Temustelec, said at our event, she told the story about meeting Maya Lin, and Maya Lin asked her, she had met all these elders and they were very polite and they were very thoughtful. And she said, where's the rage? Where's the anger? If this had happened to my people, I would just be so angry. And Bobby's answer to that was, we've always been here and we're not going away. This is our land. And when you know that, and the story always ends with, we're not going anywhere, it gives you some peace of mind. But in my mind, it gives you a connection to the place. And it also gives you an obligation to take care of it.
The river is a living thing. I have always been attracted to this idea of pantheism, which is all things are sacred, all things are alive. And I feel like a lot of indigenous peoples believe that, and there's respect for all of that. And you're right, we've lost a lot of that in today's world. What are some of the things that have affected you the most about, because you're out there gathering some of these stories, right, Colin? Who are some of the people that you've been talking to, and is there anything that stands out in your mind that really was an aha moment for you at one point?
So that's a really good question. And there are so many things that really come to mind. I just think of so many stories. So Wilfred Scott is a Nez Perce elder, and everyone calls him Scotty. And he's a really hilarious guy and a great, incredible storyteller. And he organizes these memorials. And he does one every year in April at Fort Vancouver with the Red Heart Band from the Nez Perce tribe. And the Red Heart Band, without getting into too many details, in 1877, when Chief Joseph was fleeing, there were others too, including the Red Heart Band. And the cavalry came from Fort Vancouver. It was the military stronghold in the Northwest. And, you know, we may look at it and it's a quaint little historic place, but that was the military might of America. And they captured members of the Red Heart Band of Nez Perce Indians and brought them back to Fort Vancouver and held them there for a year. And under terrible conditions, there were human rights abuses there. And a young boy died. And so about 20 years ago, the people of Vancouver, led by the mayor, reached out, and they were veterans, right? And Scotty was a veteran too, reached out to say, you know, we need to reconcile. You know, we need to get together. And so for the last 20 years, Scotty and Horace Axtell, who is another Nez Perce elder who passed away last year, they've been coming to Vancouver to do this memorial service to reconcile. And he said in this interview, we're not asking for an apology. We're not asking for, you know, forgiveness. That's not what this is about. This is about honoring the ancestors. And when you honor the ancestors, you honor yourself. And in my mind, that story gets to so much of what Confluence is all about, because we're not trying to lecture people about here's how you should be. We just want to connect people to the larger and broader and more inclusive history of this place, because it matters.
Yes. I mean, really, Lewis and Clark were tourists. They were tourists.
That's right.
I mean, I'm sorry, there was a civilization here that was an incredibly, wonderfully, culturally rich people. And anyway, yes, so thank you for that. Let's talk just for a moment about the educational programs that you are doing.
Yeah, so these story gatherings are part of what we call Confluence in the Community. So there are four parts of Confluence. One is the sites, you know, building them and taking care of them. The second part is Confluence in the Community, which is getting out into events to create meaningful cultural events that connect people to place. We also have a website that we're building that we call Confluence Online. But the last part is perhaps the highest profile in some circles, and that is Confluence in the Classroom. And it's a very simple program. What we do is we connect K-12 students with an Indigenous artist or educator to do a meaningful project about the Columbia River system. And there's a field trip to a culturally significant site, and there is a public presentation of the meaningful project. There are no tests. It can be an art class, it can be a history class, it can be a social studies class, it can be an environment class. It can be in the fourth grade, it can be in the middle school, it can be in high school. It's flexible that way, but the main point is to be a confluence, to bring cultures together and to connect kids to the larger and broader history of the Columbia River system. And it's a really powerful program. In Vancouver, there was an artist named Toma Villa, who's Yakima, and he does murals. He's a modern artist, but he incorporates Native imagery into his murals and his visual art. And he worked with these kids at Discovery Middle School to do a huge mural from one end of the room to the other of a canoe. And in the canoe were all the various constituencies of the school. So there was a football player and there was a teacher, and they incorporated all kinds of stories into this mural. And it was really powerful to them to meet a young Native artist practicing his culture, telling them stories, and to actually do a meaningful project that they see every day now.
We need to bring that program here. And I know in order to do that, there's funding that right. needs to happen, and outreach to the schools, the teachers, have That's everybody right. on board. And so if people want more information, they can go to the Confluence Project or just confluenceproject.org to find out more about it. But it would be fabulous to bring that Confluence in the classroom here to Astoria. I hope we can do that soon.
Absolutely. It begins with a willing teacher who's willing to do it. And then we need a Native educator or two, more than one, educator or artist to really come into the classroom and work out a program. And then what we do is bring them together and we coordinate, we make sure it works out. And then, of course, we need the funding for it. And it's mostly a grant-funded program.
And people can actually go to confluenceproject.org, and there's a donate button there if you want to help the Confluence Project tell these stories and help people understand where they live, the history, there's so many things we don't know. And they have those magic keys for us, I think. So we just have a few minutes left, Colin. What other things would you like the listening audience to know? Obviously, we think everyone would love to be at the Liberty Theater on Saturday, February 18th from 2 to 4 to be part of this Confluence Story Gathering and panel discussion, which is really exciting because it's happening again right there live right here in our beautiful Liberty Theater. What else would you like the listening audience to know here, Colin?
You know, you've really covered it a lot, and this is really great. And I really thank you for the opportunity to really talk about all the aspects of Confluence. Because I think what I would say is the main thing to know about Confluence is the mission to connect people to place through art and education. And there are multiple ways of doing that. We're always looking for volunteers to be part of Confluence. Confluence in the Classroom is a really successful program, and it's not been in Astoria, and it's really, in previous iterations it was many years ago, but not lately and in its current form, and we're desperate to do that. So I think it would be really amazing. And also, I think I would end with, think of your own story. You know, every part of the purpose of this story gathering is not only to listen to stories, but to tell stories. And I think one of the most powerful parts of the event in Pendleton that we had was at the end when we opened it up for audience participation and they told their own stories. And we all have a connection to the story. You know, Confluence isn't about making people feel bad about the past. Confluence is about embracing the past as a story that brought us here. We can't understand where we are without looking back.
Indeed. And there's also February 18th here at the Liberty Theater. There's another Confluence Story Gathering at the Alberta Rose Theater in Portland on April 15th. And then the Columbia Gorge Discovery Center in the Dalles is having one on May 6th. How exciting it must be at this time for you to see all of these things really coming together in Confluence.
Yeah, that's exactly right.
It's happening. Yeah. Thank you so much, Colin, for your work on this. It is vitally important. I know I had the opportunity to meet some New Zealand Maori artists, and when they began to explain who they were, they didn't say, "Oh, this is my." They said, "My mountain is this. Mm. My river is this," mm-hmm. because who they are was not separate from where they are.
That's right.
You know, we are where we live, our land, our rivers, yes.
That's right.
Thank you so much, Colin.
Oh, you're welcome. Thank you for this opportunity.
Absolutely.
We really appreciate
it. Well, I encourage everyone to go to confluenceproject.org and to also come to the Liberty Theater on February 18th. Thank you so much, Kate Brister, for being the engineer today. And I also want to express my gratitude to our local talented banjo instructor, Michael Bruin, for his original theme music for this program. Until next week, find a moment for yourself today. Take a deep breath. It's so good for body, mind, and spirit. And then focus on the things that are working well in your life. There will always be those things that don't work well. However, let's focus on some positive things and then give yourself a loving and compassionate hug or a pat on the back for being uniquely you, for doing the best you can, and for being here now in this moment on the amazing planet we call Earth.